views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
This is the Code Breakers. It's March the 14th, 2017. I got DC on the line and T. Are you fellas there?
Yes, sir. Present. Greetings, yes, fellas.
Here.
Greetings. Everybody coming in clear?
Everybody loud and clear. Ready to rock and roll.
All right. Did you want to do the intro, DC? You want me to go through it?
Why don't you go ahead and go through it, so we can give the people out there. We want them to participate and give out the number. I don't want to fumble over the number and introduction, anything of that nature. So
yeah, well, I'll try to remember the number in a second. But anyway, the title of the program is going to be Get Out. It's going to be we're going to spend some time discussing that particular film from a Code Breakers perspective. A few things we're going to discuss is going to be Jordan Peele, the director, how he identifies as a biracial black male, and his opinions on racism that we've heard that he's posted online. Also, the Ugandan brother, Daniel, cannot pronounce his last name. And just our opinions overall, I think, and probably one of the bigger key factors is white feminism and white matriarchy. And also black people and our inferiority in the sunken place. And so we'll kind of take it from there. DC, did you want to go ahead and just give us your initial opinion on what you thought of the film and just kind of how, or if it ties, if it ties to anything around race and racism? Obviously, we're in a system of racism, so of course it's connected at some level. Give us your opinion on that. We'll let you kind of kick that off, but and just also try to, if you, and you know, this is where I come from on it, just try to put it in. When we talk about, obviously I talk about levels of things, just try to kind of put it in the importance. Is it a very important thing? Does it really express some concepts and some thoughts, from a Code Breakers perspective, from a Neely Fuller perspective, just show some of the connection that it has and intricacies based off the system of racism?
Well, first off, I'd like to thank everybody that is, tuning in today. Hopefully the program, you will find the program constructive, and we would do our best to share our thoughts without causing confusion, hopefully to give you a little bit more insight about what our views are when it pertains to the system of racism, white supremacy, and basically help try to decode or give a little bit more nuanced discussion to some of the discussions that I heard with Get Out. So the movie Get Out, I think that it would require us to basically discuss the people in particular that I would like to discuss is the director, Jordan Peele, his background, some of the actual interviews I saw that he did, And also, now that it's becoming a hot item, the Ugandan brother, Daniel Kaluuya, I think is the way you pronounce his name and the importance of that. And last but not least, the racist apex predator, white woman, passing on generations of racism, throwing stones and hiding hands.
Did you hear that with the apex predator title?
She is the apex. The apex predator. That is how I'm going to describe her. In fact, the villain of the movie, because of the ineptitude of the white males in the movie, is the reason why Daniel Kaluuya escaped. I'm going to get to that later. But the ineptitude of the white male is the confusion behind actually keeping things in line and dealing with that victim of racism is the reason why he was able to escape. The apex predator set up the prey and everything. They did their job. They brought the food to the table. They brought the victim there. All the white male had to do was do the transfer and do everything and get everything settled. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Let me stop. Jordan Peele, from the Keele and Peele fame. This is a black person with a white parent. I think that's very, very important. Also is a person that has married a white woman recently. He said, when I was listening to a couple of his interviews, he did actually say that he wrote this way before he met his wife, which is very, very interesting. It makes me think that this may not have been something that he actually may have wrote if he thought of this after he met his wife, because if you're going through the whole story and you understand exactly what the person that's in the actual story, which is Chris, the protagonist, is going through, it is just interesting to see that this particular person, which I would imagine he is kind of expressing within himself and his experience with being with a white family and, of course, dating white women on a regular basis. I would imagine this is not the first white woman he's ever dated. He's probably speaking from his experience as a black male and being in that space, being that intimate with the actual apex predators and how they actually move, because make no mistake, the white woman is the actual villain. She is Jason. She is Freddy Krueger. She is the monster of this particular movie. And it's not even close to the calculation of the white woman in this particular movie. And I'm just thinking from a code breaker's perspective, when thoughts are basically being jotted down about how do I want this movie to be portrayed? How do I want the black protagonist, which is very dark skinned, by the way, this brother, by the way, Daniel Kaluuya, which he is black. He is a victim of racism. We're not going to play that game here. He's British and all this, where I imagine his parents escaped Ugandan genocide. If he's Ugandan, I'm pretty sure that his parents basically wanted to move around and get somewhere where they thought it was safe. I don't know their story, but I imagine that that's probably what it is.
Either way, even if his family had a little bit of money in Uganda, don't matter.
Victim of racism. Anyway, the noticeable thing about this particular movie, and I think that Jordan Peele, now this is where it goes into just basically enforcing my opinion, he made this movie on purpose to have a very highly melanated male and one of the whitest women. Oh, did I forget to mention that Ashley Williams is the daughter of NBC nightly news anchor Brian Williams. Yeah, that's right. The Brian Williams, the war correspondent that lied about his so-called service and doing all the actual war views and things of that nature. Very deceptive.
Just making it up. He was just making it up.
on the program called Girls, which is a very, very white program, everything is, I think this very, very strategic. And I don't watch the program called Girls, but from what I understand, the character that she plays in this particular movie could have just basically picked up and had a black boyfriend. It just took a trip. It could have been the same character that she actually played in Girls, if I understand her role in that particular TV show that's on HBO. But anyway, Jordan Peele, when I listened to the victim of racism, Jordan Peele, describe what's his reasoning for doing the movie, I find it very interesting that I don't hear him discuss himself or call himself biracial. I haven't heard him use those terms. I have heard him say that he has a white parent or that his mother is white. But this is clearly a black male that has accepted the classification or just come to grips with the classification of being black. So that's one. I don't think that he's ever questioned that, even though, you know, the look of him, you wouldn't even think that he actually had a white parent.
You don't think his mama said, what do you think his mama was telling him growing up?
Ooh, that is interesting. I don't know. I don't know. When I see him and I see him speak, he doesn't seem to have that white parent confusion. It looked like he may have been clear for a long time as far as like his classification, by the way. I just get that from him when I see him speak.
Do you think subconsciously the mother of the film is his mother?
Ooh. We can get back to that. But that's what I wanted to kind of give a background on all the particulars. Give a background on all the actual main characters in the movie, the director, the antagonist, the white apex predator, white woman, the victim of racism, Chris, Daniel Kaluuya, and kind of just set this table before we get discussing this whole movie and then go into detail about, what we picked up from the actual movie itself. T, did you have anything you wanted to share about the movie or the director or the characters by any chance?
Well, I did appreciate the thoughts on it, and I did want to congratulate, give a shout out to Mr. Jordan Peele on his successful movie. And what's interesting too is that the person who did this, the music score for the film, was also a biracial man. By the name of Michael Abels. Very, very talented brother. He had a chance to showcase his talent on this particular film. He's a composer, and he has worked with disadvantaged youth. But he is also what you would call biracial. I haven't seen any interviews with him or anything in that regard, but just kind of doing a search on him, I noticed that. And so he put together a pretty good team of I'm sure he had people co-write with him as well as other actors, but the movie, I'm trying to keep it intro-oriented here because I know we're going a little deeper, but the movie was very layered to me. And one thing about a good movie, and I know we talk about there are more important things to do than watch films, but I think this is something that's could be very very important and something that we could also learn from. But it's very layered, and any good film is going to have a number of different storylines coursing through it and have a number of layers, whereas when you watch it one time versus a second or third time, you're always going to pick up on something different. And not only that, but he's also, not only good at music or working with Michael Abels, but he's also layered in a lot of hidden meaning, symbolism, I should say, as well as esoteric and hidden items in it. So to me, it was genius, because when you do a movie, they say you do it three times: when you write it, when you shoot it, and then when you edit it. Because a lot of times stuff, through that whole process, those three particular, pre-production, production, and post-production, there are a lot of things that get changed, a lot of things that will get removed or added. You know, your characters bring certain nuances to the character that you wrote that may not necessarily be something you anticipated when you shot it, and it comes across on screen completely different than what you intended, but you might see it and say, hey, that's excellent what they're doing as actor or actress. So I do want to share that and give a shout out to, you know, the brother Michael Abels, as well as Mr. Jordan Peele, and then the other two actors who were, I think, also key, which probably would not be as talked about, the brother Marcus Henderson, who played the, I guess you call him the seal hand, and also the sister, what was her name? She was the grandmother, the one that was in the house. Georgina was in the house. I can't remember her. Betty Gabriel was her name. And she was actually in The Purge, and she played a strong role in The Purge because she was out kicking ass in The Purge. So it's interesting to see her make that that pivot.
I think he's made already $100 million, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, it was shot on about a $4 million budget, which if you go out on IMDb, for instance, and look at some of the budgets of some of these other films, especially sci-fi films, for instance, even some of the non-sci-fi films, $4 million is a shoestring budget. That's nothing. I mean, you got films out there doing...
Dude, I don't think thrillers make $100 million, though, do they? Thriller movies, do they?
What was the last thriller that you could think of?
I really don't watch them, to be honest with you. I don't think they make that kind of money, though. Do they? They're normally popcorn films, like Scream or something.
Yeah, but that was...
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. There are some genres where they kind of fit into the same...
Even though I think Scream may have been actually a hit, actually.
Thriller, suspense, that are like franchises that have made some bread.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're only... One of them... main thrillers that I could think of that I'm not really going to make a comparison here, but that's good or bad, but one of the main ones I could think of is Eyes Wide Shut. If anyone saw that, it came out in 99. And that one had a $65 million budget. And it didn't even make back its budget over, I guess, the gross period. I don't know what they consider that as far as getting gross earnings, or maybe a year. But it made back about $55 million. So if you figure, I mean, he's more than triple, you know, he's more than quadruple, whatever you want to call it, his budget already.
Yeah, it's like 10 to 15 million.
Yeah. And same thing with not to get off on a tangent, the same thing with Birth of a Nation.
What I'm curious about, what do you think the popularity was around white folks going to watch either film, actually? You know, what was the, where is the thirst coming from? From white folks going to watch shows where black people are killing them.
I think it's something new. I mean, you really haven't, I mean, we've seen black people get killed in horror films, but... we've never really seen a protagonist, a black guy, classified as black, as the main character. So I think that's what's so interesting about this. And I think that's one reason why it was greenlit, because if you look at Hollywood, a lot of what they're doing is remakes of everything.
Yeah.
And so by infusing something like bringing something like this out, this is new, this is refreshing, if you want to call it that, some people have not seen before. You know, it's not a slave movie. It's not a athletic movie. You know, it's not a not any of those. It's a completely different thing. So you probably see a lot more of this.
You don't think it was a blip? Meaning, you know, there may be a thirst for it, but maybe from a racism perspective, it's probably not going to be a good idea to pump out 20 of these.
Yeah, I think I don't think it's a blip so long as Trump is in office, and I say that because all movies have a shelf life, and so you want to try to capitalize on the racial sentiment that's going on within the larger culture.
I think
in the environment.
Because we're, I think we're on movie number three, right? Django. And then Birth of a Nation, and then this one, right? That'll be three.
Three.
In the last, what, 5 years? We're black people killing white people.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, we have we, I don't think the thing of it is, though, in those three movies, we haven't seen, I might be getting a little ahead of the show, but we haven't seen the protagonist, the black protagonist, kill any pivotal or any key white characters, antagonists.
Right.
Because at the end, I'm getting ahead of myself, but he didn't, he still couldn't kill that white girl. Even considering all the stuff he put, she put him through.
Let's save that. We're going to deep dive into that. So let me kind of like wheel back around really, really quick, because I just kind of want to hit on this point, especially about, Just save that one, T, because that was going to be the finisher upper, especially when it comes down to the apex predator, which is the white woman. But I wanted to discuss the infighting that's been going on just briefly between victims of racism. There was a discussion, obviously. Samuel Jackson made a comment about Daniel Kaluuya playing the role of Chris in the movie Get Out, and he shared his sentiments as a concern that black actors could have portrayed this role in a more sincere fashion than what Daniel Kaluuya portrayed this particular role, and that Brit he made the comparison of Daniel being British. Now, as far as I know, I don't think Daniel's parents were born in Britain or even raised there. I don't think so. I think he's a first generation Brit, which means that he doesn't even come from that particular culture. He's Ugandan, basically, that happened to move to Britain recently. So he is a first generationer of Western so-called direct culture. But I think it was very interesting because he had a response, and I think that is worth noting, because if you get into the deep detailed, he already feels like he's outside of himself, which is very, very interesting. And I think that Jordan Peele's biggest genius is the fact that he got somebody so dark skinned. And guys, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know of any contemporary young actor outside of the Moonlight Gentleman that is as dark as Chris. And he had a certain type of vulnerability to him where it couldn't be a gentleman that had that hard edge look, where it had to be real, like a non-threatening dark-skinned male. And I think that he embodied that to the T. So I think that he did a wonderful job. I didn't have no problem with it at all. But this is some of his thoughts that he shared as far as responding to Samuel Jackson's concern. When I'm around black people, I'm made to feel other because I'm dark skinned. I had to wrestle with that, with people going, "You're too black." Then I come to America and they say, "You're not black enough." I go to Uganda, I can't speak the language. In India, I'm black. In the black community, I'm dark skinned. In America, I'm British. I mean, it just goes back to what we always talk about, which is blackness is a forced classification.
I love
it. You get people trying to describe their differences as far as like, I'm you. I mean, you know, you can't mistake me for a biracial person. You can't mistake me for anything else but pure African bloodline.
Original.
Original. I am an original. Right, basically.
He's an original. He would be classified as the original.
I'm the closest thing to black that you have seen.
And you
it wouldn't have been the same thing if you had Michael B. Jordan playing this character. Like, when he showed them laying down together and that contrast, that was purposeful. Like, dang, because everybody, the first thing you think is, dang, you know, This is a highly melanated brother, and this is like the whitest white woman on the planet. Like the contrast, like the whitest of the white and the, you know, to the original, you know, bloodline almost. Like, this is the contrast here that, and I don't know if that's what he was going for, but I know that he purposely wanted somebody dark skinned. Like, well, you know, I know that that was purposeful.
And in some cases, and this is very anecdotal and definitely ignorant, but I know in some cases, let me not say some cases, the few people that I've seen, the handful of people, right, 3, 4, 5 people I've seen, as far as, you know, white people go, they, for whatever reason, not to get into that, you know, I'm not Dr. Welsing, I'm not Dr. Welsing, but I have seen some patterns, you know, very anecdotal, just from my day-to-day life, where white people, for whatever reason, either have sought darker-skinned people, or darker skinned people in some very, very few cases possibly may feel the way they feel, and white people have taken advantage of that position. You know, I think in a system of racism where things are based off of color, you know, I think that the darker you are in this environment, there are some cases where you may, not everyone, but some, but few may feel a certain way the darker you are based off of treatment. And I think that vulnerability white people can take advantage of. And I think that they're targeted possibly even. I don't know if that's true. I'm just kind of making it up. But I feel like they might even be targeted by white people. But that's just my own very, very naive, very ignorant opinion on that.
No, I don't. I wouldn't downplay what you said, Paradox. I think you're spot on. Now, the reason behind that, you do have, I mean, I've heard that some women classified as white will date so-called black men to piss their family off. Now, that's kind of something that's been puppeted throughout their various talking circles, so I'm not exactly sure the significance or the accuracy of that statement. But I can see it being a possibility. So, because, I mean, she really didn't, you know, when he asked the question of her, he said, you know, did you tell your parents that I'm black? And she did what she did throughout most of the movie, which is deflect. She was master manipulator, excellent at deflection. Very, very good at deflection. And so whenever you ask certain questions of her, she would always kind of put the onus back on him and say, well, why, you know, yeah, my, you know, hey, mom, dad, I'm coming home. My boyfriend is a black man.
Well, you know what's funny is that DC made me think about what you just said. You just made me think about, both of you just made me think about, it's possible that it almost feel more universal than how a black person that's, say, from Alabama, or a black person, say, from New York, that's in that same age range, you know, had some culture to him, would have said it similarly, but a little bit different, approaching that situation. Because, you know, when you get into class and vernacular, how you want to come off, your upbringing, who you've been around, who you trying to be like, kind of impacts the way you're going to phrase that to her. So it's interesting looking at his writing and then the delivery of the two things and how a bit generic it was. So I can get it from a cultural perspective. If your lineage is tied to Alabama, Mississippi, the Carolinas or whatever, regardless of where you are in America, that's because, you know, it's not because I can't say what he's experienced, because what makes it fascinating is that he's going to have that conversation in England, Germany. He's going to have that conversation in Uganda, South Africa, and you know, wherever, you know what I mean? You're going to have that conversation within this type of system. Now, clearly, even outside of this paradigm, you would have that conversation, right? So if you come from a well-off family and, you know, you bring somebody with you that's from, say, a neighborhood that when you mention it, your parents know where is what it is. If you bring that person to the house, you may want to mention that to have them prepare for a certain energy that's going to come into their space that may not necessarily fit initially. And then as well as, you know, even if you went overseas and you was dealing with, you know, another group of people and you have different faiths or whatever, you also will see some, not to get too far out there, but you also see some dynamics when it comes to that particular conversation.
I'm glad that you fleshed that out, Paradox, because that's actually you're talking from a director's perspective in a sense, because when you're on set and you're dealing with an actor or actress, you're dealing with how they deliver their lines that you wrote. They may ad-lib a little bit, or they may, you know, you may want that character to move a certain way, make certain facial expressions. So that the way you relay that to that person, that actor or actress that you're in front of, is going to be based largely on how you wrote it, how you felt about it, and how you want it to be conveyed on the screen. So you put yourself in the director's chair. And so I think a lot of what you see on film is going to be, even from the actors and actresses, although they all bring their own type of energy and type of way of creating that particular character, it's still going to be a reflection largely of Jordan Peele and his experiences. And like DC alluded to it, he has been working on the script for quite some time. He said 8 years.
Yeah, he put it down and came back for a while. They tried to act as if this could have been actor suicide and first time director suicide because of how he did it. Due to the type of film that we can't pretend that it's a film based off a race, right? Uh-huh. It's a thriller film based off a race purposefully. Based off what he said. So he knew that career wise it's a massive risk because you don't know how the public is gonna accept it. You don't know how Hollywood is gonna deal with it. Now when I went to watch the film in a, I guess, upper middle class, semi wealthy area, 25% black population in that particular area. That theater had somewhat of a mix in the film, but when they was killing white folks, I've never heard people cheer that much in my life. I don't know what that is because I am not a psychologist. I don't even know what that means. But I'm not sure the behavior that these type of films provoke. I don't really know, you know, is it healthy? Does it expose something? I don't want to make it deeper than it is. I don't think the film personally is that deep. I don't even think talking about Get Out is that important, just to put that on the record. I think it's been a bit trendy and everyone is talking about it, and I think it's easy bait, possibly. I think there are some bigger things out there that's going on. But anyway, with that said, you can call into the program at 1-866-510-9025. If you would like to comment on this program, I think you hit star if you want to speak. DC, did you want to continue?
I guess we can go ahead and dive in now and get into the meat of the actual picture. So,
actually, guys, I just wanted to let you know you have a caller on the board. Y'all had put in for calls; they've been hanging on. So, if you're able to see the board, if you want to bring them in now or if you want to wait.
Oh, no, we can go ahead and bring them in if they're willing to share. I think the 9600, if you would like to share any of your thoughts, please feel free.
Hey, good evening. Can I be heard?
Greetings. Yes, sir.
Hey, I had a comment regarding the comment regarding Jordan Peele, the director. I had a comment in regards to being called biracial. I know that he never identifies himself as biracial, but he is. And to me, I'm saying that most black men, to me, if they're biracial, they identify themselves as damn black. However, I'm noticing that more biracial women may identify themselves as damn biracial. And I'm guessing that maybe black men, they don't want to look weak, so they claim to be black. Or women want to be closer to the power structure, so they claim to be biracial because one of their parents were white. And I was just wondering if you guys had any feedback on that.
Ooh.
Wow.
T, do you want to jump in on that or? But let me just say this. Somebody that looks like Jerome Bettis' little brother can't claim anything else. He doesn't look like he has a white parent. So I think that has a lot to do with it, with him. Like, you know, he would look, I mean, even from his features, like he doesn't have anything that looks outside of the average black person. He's brown skinned. He's not light skinned. He has broad nose, big lips. You know, I don't know what his hair texture is like. So he would be a case I wouldn't really kind of use as an example of someone that claims blackness per se. Maybe somebody that's a little bit more on that line where people are always, you know, questioning them, because I don't think anybody's going to sit there and say, well, no, you need to say that you're biracial or have these discussions with Jordan Peele because of his phenotype into what he looks like. See, because everything is all about what we want to accept. Now, as far as black women are concerned, from the lighter shade to the darker shade, I think that has a lot to do with selection and beauty. So whoever gets the most attention in whoever's eyes, in the way they receive their attention, seems to be what people focus on. Now, you know, in our area, people that are, you know, from the DMV, I would suggest that there are a lot of differences as far as skin tone. Most black people are around a lot of people that are very, very so-called light-skinned black people. So it's not something that is out of the ordinary when you see that. Like, you know, you'll see even, you know, women that look like, what's the lady that's on Flashdance? Like, that's not out of the ordinary. You'll see that, you know, that kind of...
And she can definitely pass. She can pass.
But if you see someone that say, well, yeah, you know, this is Tasha, you know, this is so-and-so. And you wouldn't think that that's out of the ordinary outside of just being, man, she's very, very light skinned. And, you know, shout out to Childish Gambino, Redbone, you know, that's the term that is in the vernacular. That's something that we use all the time. So that would be just a high yellow red bone, basically.
I don't use that terminology.
It is name calling. It is name calling, no doubt about it. I'm shouting out the song.
Stay woke,
brother. Let's keep it on the movie.
No,
you know,
I mean,
but I hope that answered your question. I think that when it comes down to women saying that, I have seen women say it that are darker skinned too, where they say, well, I'm not just black, I'm so-and-so, or I have different mixtures in me. So, you know, that's the reason why my hair looks like this or my skin is like this. I'm just not just regular black people. But I think with, like you said, to the man's side, I don't think there's any kind of cool points that you get by, you know, quoting that you're so-called biracial, you know, within the black so-called manosphere or black male identity. I don't think that you get any kind of cool points, but like, oh man, you know, I got this biracial homeboy, you know, and everybody just, I don't know anybody that talks like that. So
you may get
some of the language behind it.
You may get whipped up on.
It's true.
So I got one more question. Do you guys, have you ever heard of any biracial man actually say that he was biracial? Like even Colin Kaepernick, I mean, he says that he's a black man. You know, I'm sure it's happened, but I rarely hear that.
Yeah, somebody that's from the suburbs, I know people that say that are I mean, most of the time that I hear that is a actual black male with a white parent that stays in the suburbs. They'll say, well, you know, I'm not black. I'm both. It just depends on the person.
It don't matter. Until when you get that call, it'll take care of itself. This system is very efficient and very vicious. It won't last but 5 minutes. If you somewhere being coddled, if you listen to this program and you call yourself biracial, that's okay. The system will take care of that. Because if it didn't, it wouldn't be here. Because it's a whole lot of biracial and mixed. Come on, man. That's not even play with
Brett. Agreed.
It ain't the one drop rule that you white. Because most of us will be white.
Right.
Great observation, Paradox. Great observation. So I hope that answered your question, Carla. You wanted to share anything about
taking my call.
Okay, cool. T, did you want to share anything on that while we finish that up before we get into the movie?
No, I think that's good. Do we have some other callers out there?
Yeah, we do have some other callers. If any of the other callers want to kind of share their views, you can unmute 1184 if you want to.
No, that's star DC. That's star. They have the instructions on the promo, but yeah, it's the telephone number is 866. I'm sorry, 866. Let me pull up this info calls now. Y'all made me forget it. it is 866-510-9025. 866-510-9025. Anytime you have a question or comment, hit star. Watch background noise. Somebody will see you on the board and we'll call out your numbers. Thank you.
Right on. Thanks a lot for that plug, Mr. Reed. Appreciate it. Hopefully, we're trying to be as clear as possible. But I wanted to kind of jump in. So at the beginning of the actual movie.
Before you jump in, I know we had about 40 minutes into the call. I do just want to say real quick that we do appreciate Black Talk Radio Network. We definitely do appreciate being allowed to be on the program. I just wanted to put that in there.
Hey, you wanted to share anything or? We good to go?
No, I just want to echo Paradox and sentiment. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead and dive deep there.
All right, so we're going to go from the very, very beginning, and I think that the introduction kind of speaks to the paranoia of being in a black male body and the vulnerability of it. So at the very beginning of the movie, right before the movie even start, before even the credits even roll, you have a character, I think his name is Andre in the movie, Mr. Stanfield, Lakeith Stanfield from Atlanta's fame. Very good actor, by the way. Looks like David Chappelle's younger brother. I'm going on all these lookalikes in this movie. Anyway, Mr. Andre in the movie is on the phone with his girlfriend, and he is in one of the most fearful places that you can be in if you have a black male body. Not the hood, but the suburbs. And he's on the phone with his girl talking to her, and he's like, man, I don't know where I'm at. He's lost. He's walking. He's not in a vehicle, which I don't understand that. How did he actually get to walking?
We know that wasn't real. I knew a suspect when I saw that.
He's walking. I'm like, what is he doing?
Uber might have dropped him off at the wrong corner and pulled off.
There's something going on. So anyway, this white car, hence, another moment of paying attention, because he said he wanted to drop all kinds of nuggets. So anyway, this is coming directly from Jordan Peele's mouth himself when he got interviewed about this particular movie. There's a white sports vehicle that's moving very slowly, playing, is it Run Rabbit Run? Run Rabbit Run? Run
Rabbit.
Bang,
yeah.
Bang,
Run
bang.
Rabbit.
This is the, this is, if anybody knows, if you want to kind of pull that up, this is an old song. One of them old slave narrative songs of hunting, hunting in the country. You know, getting prey, which is some of the tale within the movie. Basically, this is something that they do on a regular basis. What more that you can do than getting the most vulnerable bodies on the planet and then basically mistreating those that won't be missed? So anyway, he's on the phone, so he's kind of having a discussion with his girl, you know, hey, you know, I'm lost, I don't know where I'm at, you know. And then he sees that he's being basically followed by this car. This car slows down. He's like looking. He's like, oh, no, not today. So he kind of cracks a joke. You know, the audience laughs. But then you figure out how serious it is, because when he opens the door, all of a sudden, when he looks back, he gets caught from behind. And then he does this chokehold on him. Did any of you guys kind of pick up on that? Or did you guys have anything that you kind of want to discuss on that particular scene? Did you find anything interesting about how he was that vulnerable, and how did he put his guard down at that particular moment once he found out that the suburbs? Not just walking in the suburbs, but the fact that he was just like caught with his pants down at the very, very beginning. Like, he should have just been a regular alert.
I don't think it was realistic.
Okay, so what about you, T?
To me personally, I felt very immersed in that scene, and it struck home with me, because I don't know about anybody else, but I've felt that same kind of apprehension and fear, knowing that really I'm somewhere I'm not supposed to be.
Exactly.
Right.
I don't think the scene had anything to do with what was actually going on. I think it was more of a mental thing. Like, this is how it feels to be at your most vulnerable, where you are clearly in a space, which you are in a black male body, so you're always vulnerable to attack. And nobody is going to help you. Like, I'm just saying, like, mentally, that's how I felt. Like, when I saw that, like, there's no cavalry coming for you. There's nobody there to help you. You're basically
DC
by yourself. Yeah.
Guys, if y'all allow me to answer that question about him letting his guard down, racial showcasing. He saw those black people. He thought that was a maid. He didn't know that was the, a white person fearing genetic annihilation, like Dr. Wilson talked about, and it was really a white woman. You know,
We haven't gotten that far yet, Mr. B. We're almost there. We was talking about the first scene.
Him letting his guard down, I think he felt safer by seeing black faces.
And I would just add to, not to go too far out, but something that we'll be talking about that I'll be introducing at some point, which is missing black people, specifically black women and black girls being kidnapped and going missing in this country. But we'll touch on that a little later, but I just wanted to kind of put that in there, because it is kind of around a lot of this stuff as far as black people being still, you know, we are still obviously not being seen. In a sense, where you may see us playing basketball or something on television or in a film, but in the real world, we're still to a large degree, I believe, invisible. And I think that does show not only in the prison numbers, but it also shows in black women specifically being going missing. And for some reason, that's not being discussed, but it will be something that I will be highlighting much more, and you'll see some more stuff that we're going to be pushing out on social media on that as well.
Anyway, so pushing forward. So, of course, he gets kidnapped and they work their magic on Mr. Stanfield at the very, very beginning of the movie. And then that's when the credits roll to let you know that this is not going to be a comedy. This is very, very serious. If you thought it was a joke, it's not a game. So anyway,
it wasn't funny that some random dude, black male, walking around in some neighborhood on a phone, and some idiot pulls up in a car, and he's like, "Man, I don't know what's going on with that." And then he turns around, act like he don't see the car, and then gets grabbed. You know, you don't think that looked a little comedy? Would you be telling yourself in 2017, you would never catch me as a black man knowing where I'm at. You would never catch me walking around in some random neighborhood trying to find somebody. Crazy, but funny in a sad way.
I think it had a little satire to it, but I do see the fear quoted in it, especially if somebody's familiar with that actual song, Run Rabbit Run.
Does it remind you, not to go deeper with it, but does it remind you of some dude that we all know that be in ill spots trying to get in and out here wilding? And you're like, man, what are you doing? Where were you at? Now we live
all the time.
Now I'm in Maryland, so we're talking about why you in Frederick? Go look up Frederick. Why are you in Hagerstown?
Why are you in Hagerstown?
What are you doing? You know. Anyway, that's just a local thing here, but it's in every state in this country. Especially if you live near the cities or in the areas near or outside the cities, you have brothers that we know, good friends, that be out here in these areas way out. You know, trying to get it in, already out of pocket.
As you guys have known, I have told this story on numerous occasions where I had to pick up my cousin from Hagerstown jail because he wanted to hang out with the... That's a whole nother deal. I don't want nobody to really figure out who I am. It's probably too late, but with that, what I hope...
we get where it's going, though.
No, he was out there trying to push a little something, and he thinking he hot, and he moving everything, and things are moving, and I'm like, man, and you know, like you said, you get that call, like, nah, I mean... What was you thinking? You know, you're gonna get cooked out there, and that's on the hustle side, and that's on the sex side, both.
I think that's what made that scene so powerful. I think that's what DC was alluding to.
Exactly.
We all know people who've been in that situation. But
you're somewhere where you know that you are totally lost in an environment that is without question dangerous. Extremely dangerous. And if something happens to you, you would not be missed for a long time. You can go missing, and it has been proven through the news feeds. All these black women, black children, black males missing. Nobody knows or seen where they gone. Where are these people showing up? Then all of a sudden you'll see, you know, a black teenager getting hung somewhere. Or, you know, I think there was one in Atlanta about 5 years ago that they rolled up into a mat, and they talked about some of the organs were gone. Like his body was filled with newspapers and things of that nature. Come on now. Like,
well,
this is not no game. This is very serious.
Last year, I think about 65,000 women, black women went missing.
Exactly.
I think it's around. That's a ridiculous number.
Can you imagine if those were white women missing? Then nobody would care. The white woman in Aruba, they still talk about that woman to this day. The one that went missing in Aruba for some kind of shenanigans that went on out there.
If you watch the mainstream media, you would think that black people never went missing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, so going back, let's get to the main course here. So, Chris, the main protagonist, dark skinned black male, very very important to reiterate that, has a white girlfriend that he is falling head over heels for in this particular movie. He's a photographer. He's a very talented brother. Appears to be doing very well for himself. And appeared to be in white spaces, clearly, because he met the protagonist. I think, antagonist. Is her name Allison in the movie? Or is that her real name? Her name is not Allison. Rose. Ooh, there you go. And every rose has its thorn. Shout out, Guns N' Roses. Anyway, So they are going to meet her parents, and Chris drops the question of all questions. You know, everything is cool, and he, you know, he's trying to play it off non-suspecting, not to try to be too. He appears to be that kind of brother there. He doesn't want to kind of ruffle any feathers or, you know, go to I'm blackety black, y'all, you know, but he still has a little bit, you know, woke in him, you know what I mean? Of course, with Redbone playing in the background, he's like, do your parents know that I'm black? And how he just paused to kind of wait for the response. Like, he, I think that what was very, very key was how he said it. Like, it was kind of like the most, not innocent, but it appeared to be an open-ended question to me.
Do you think that she found him? And I know what the movie showed, that it showed later on, but
you're breaking up a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're still breaking up.
Okay, go ahead then.
No, go ahead. See if it come back on. See if it fix.
I don't know. It may just be crazy. I don't know what's going on. But anyway.
It's still breaking up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Paradox, if you would, just hang up and reestablish a new connection that often solves it.
Okay.
T, did you want to share your thoughts on that scene where he was basically asking that, dropping that main question about, do your parents know that I'm a black person?
Yeah, he was... You could tell the apprehension from the start of that scene once she came to the, you know, to his apartment or his flat, whatever the case may be. And she was, you know, do you have your deodorant? Do you have your toothbrush? You know, he's real nonchalant, like, you know, check. You know, I really don't want to do this, but, you know, I have feelings for you, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to go through with it. And so, not too much to say on that particular scene, but yeah, it was, and that's what I was talking about, the deflection of, because she was like almost in jest, like, you know, yeah, my, you know, mom and dad, I'm coming home, my boyfriend is a black man. And she turned into a humorous moment and lowered his defenses, which she's been taught how to do that by the matriarch, but that goes into a little bit deeper. But go ahead, brother.
If you see this movie twice, if you pay attention to the way she moves, the way she kind of figures him out and kind of bounce off his actual responses, you can see the predator in her. Like, her eyes are telling. It's crucial, the body language in this movie. Like, I saw it three times now. I saw it by watching it, you know, online, streaming. Shout out to Cody, if anybody is out there and you do not want to go to the movies to go see it and support it, you can download it. It should be on Cody right now. I think it still should be there. But anyway, just the way her body language was when she was basically kind to trying to figure out exactly what his whole intentions is, because she's a predator. She's trying to get this brother there to the house so they can basically suppress him and eliminate him from the planet, basically, and have him basically in the background somewhere in the sunken place. So I thought it was very, very interesting on how she was going to keep this up. And basically she's figured out on how to disarm him and his concerns. So when he does come to the surface and share his concerns about, yeah, that's kind of weird. Have you ever talked to them about you dating a black person? Did they ever respond to you? We haven't really never talked about this, obviously. And the fact that they never really discussed this, you could see kind of like a little bit of how her predatorial, you know, thing started to go along with him. So I thought that was very, very interesting, just that whole packing scenario. Paradox, you back on?
Yeah, I'm back on. Am I still breaking up?
No, you good. You get to go now. So
the question that I had was just, do you think that that she went after him? What I mean by that is that not necessarily put herself in a position where he would either come to her, or that she would go at him, looking at him as possibly being weak or vulnerable in any way.
Yeah, that's the whole.
Even though I know the movie itself, she's literally targeting people, of course.
Absolutely. 1,000%.
But I'm just saying from more of a pure perspective, that just in general, if you want to tie her to the broader picture of all white females who literally go after black males or any non-white person, is it the white woman from the beginning with the power, all ages mostly, is allowing that event to take place? And you're saying that is what's happening, right?
I think that they're trying to make a point.
I mean, in all cases, in general, that even in the real world, in a sense, that if the white woman is still doing the choosing when it comes to the non-white person, they're in the vulnerable or in the weaker position.
If you go through the annals of history and you check the reason why there has been so-called race riots, a white woman is at the actual beginning or the cause of these particular violent outbursts. And these violent outbursts are justified due to the vulnerability of the so-called white woman every single time.
So we should have called this program the Apex Predator. The white woman is what it sounds like instead of Get Out, huh?
The woman that is basically, she got to be in her 80s now, that got Emmett Till killed, just admitted that she lied about it. Like, this is clear. Like, this is not something that is made up. There is too much evidence that says to the contrary. The Tulsa, Oklahoma whole confusion thing, that was basically set off because I think the black male bumped into a white woman or accidentally didn't say excuse me, or he was in the same space with the white woman, and all of a sudden it just basically set it off right there. So we can get more further into detail and kind of get deep into the actual plot when we get back. So we're going to go ahead and take a break. You are listening to the Code Breakers, so we'll see you on the other side.
Oh, this you crazy mother...
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
We are back. This is the Code Breakers. DC, that you want to continue?
Well, I don't want to kind of like hog the program because I know
that's fine,
you know,
man.
I have a lot of thoughts about this, but yeah, I just wanted to kind of like move forward and go to one of the next particular scenes. Did you guys have anything that you wanted to share about further about that whole? Did you tell your parents that I'm a black person? I just want to kind of like hit the most pivotal points. Go ahead.
No, I just want to say right quick before you move on to the progression of the film, in terms of music score, because if anybody listened to the music score, I thought it was excellent, like I said, done by a brother as well, or biracial man. And in the portion where they're on the road trip, this part will lead up to what you want to get into, D.C. When they're going up to the actual house, Rose's parents' house, they're playing a song which they're actually speaking in Swahili. And it has kind of a haunting kind of melody to it. And but what are the basis of that particular track was, and loosely translated, they're talking about listening to your ancestors and to based on what your ancestors are telling you to run, to make moves, if something is not on up and up, something doesn't feel right. And I kind of think that kind of leads up to the whole deer scene as far as
wake him up, to stop him from going into his demise, to the ancestors was calling him, and it was like a sacrifice, because it looked like it was like on some kind of rope or something, like some kind of spirit just threw the giraffe, I mean, threw the deer in the middle of the road.
Probably bad special effects, but yeah.
Well, the brother was on the budget. He was definitely on the budget, so. But yeah, just going directly into that. They're already on the road. They're going on a road trip, so that they're flowing. They're heading up to upstate New York, I would imagine, to either Connecticut, where she's from, or upstate New York, where all the white people stay, obviously. And the deer just comes out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, boom, they hit the deer. And, you know, this scene is basically cut where, of course, police are called, and once the police is called, there is a scene where he is dealing with the police, and every black male, if you are listening to this program, you have either known someone or you have experienced this numerous times. And I can say that I have experienced this numerous times, not actually being with a white person, but just being either in the company of other black people or by myself, which is a terrifying thing, because you never know how your interaction is going to be with race soldiers. So getting to this particular place where he just wants to get along, he just want to get on with it. When the police officer gets to looking at their whole situation, and he kind of like, you know, does his little kind of eye thing and just be like, I can just let them go, but no, I'm just going to go ahead and just ask this person for his license. You know, do you have any form of ID, any license? Now, I have seen where I have been in a vehicle and I haven't been driving either, and that same question has been asked for me. Now, I know that this happens on a regular basis. You're not driving a vehicle. The officer will ask, well, can I get your license and your ID also? Just to make sure everything is on the up and up.
They ask that from everybody in the car.
And the fact that he's so used to it, and the way he looks, like, it's not even something that he even had to think about. It was not even nothing that he thought there was even, you know, any kind of mistreatment. He just wanted, hey, okay, here, you know, you're on some bullshit. So let me just give you my driver's license and ID, and so we can just go ahead and get on the road, because I know I haven't done anything. But of course, you know, the white woman being who she is, and you know how deceptive and cunning the apex predator that she is, of course she has something to say, because of course that white officer is not going to do anything to her. Oh, this is some nonsense. But she didn't use those words, but she was just basically telling the officer, you ain't going to do no such thing. You're not touching him. This is mine. You're not going to interrupt. You're not going to interrupt what I'm trying to do here. He's my prey. You understand? She might as well just had him like on a, you know, like how you see National Geographic in the wild, and you see a lion that they got their dinner, and you see the other hyenas just trying to grab at it. Mm-hmm. Then she just have to like roar at them like, hey, you know what's good.
You made me think about
he's mine.
You made me think about The Blind Side with Sandra Bullock and some other things, and also white women convincing, I think, even white men to go get black babies as well. You know, I think it kind of has that same energy for some reason. I don't know why though.
Do you have anything you wanted to share on that scene, the infamous police stop?
Oh yeah, like you said, I think most of us have experienced that one too many times. Like you said, you never know which way it could go, and you could see how if she was not there, that transaction would have went completely different, because he was actually upset that he was not able to practice racism on Chris.
Oh my God, he was just waiting.
He wanted him to say something.
he wanted him to say. Oh man.
But thanks to her, you know, which is ironic, but thanks to her, he actually came out unscathed because he was in an area which, based on the system, he should not have been in. If he was driving that car by himself, for instance, we saw the brother who was shot, who was his car broke down. But if you were in a place where you should not be based on the system, anything is liable to happen. And so it made Chris more vulnerable to her for the fact that she said, "Oh, you know, I'm not gonna let anybody mess with my man." You know, so now he's in an even more vulnerable position because I just saved you. I just helped you.
This could have went a lot worse. This is the first time in this movie where I am putting the argument out there that the main reason why this movie needs to be discussed, and it's just from a contextual standpoint, is that the most dangerous person in a white body in a socialized situation in the times of so-called peace outside of warfare is the white woman. It's not even close. It's not even close. He couldn't even do anything to her. Like he couldn't get aggressive. She disarmed that white race soldier. Like, stand down. I trump you, regardless of whatever you're trying.
He even had a backup call.
That's what I'm saying.
He said, no, I don't need help.
You good? Now, we know what that situation would have been if it was even another white male in there. That ass would have got beat. I mean it like that. Like everybody, he would have beat the white male for being, "You don't need to be with this black male. I'm going to whip you too. I'm going to take you out for being with him." But a white woman?
Whatever you doing.
Listen, if he goes back to the chief, which I would imagine that the chief probably got white daughters, and he say, "Well, yeah, you know, I had to beat her down too because she was trying to protect." He gonna be what? Excuse me? Don't never lose track of what whiteness is. And see, to me, that's what this movie is about. Like, the overall ability to create this whole illusion of whiteness and what they're protecting. When people say protection, I'm protecting, I'm providing, there is a very strategic vulnerability to that. But when she flexes, it trumps. It's nothing that you can do. It's really nothing that you can do. It's like he looked at her and he was just like, damn. This is I actually cannot do anything at this moment. But I guarantee you, if it was like some white males in there and they listening to rap music, and if Chris got out of line, he gonna give over that. He gonna give over the license. He would have told a white male, "Hey, you shut up. I'm talking to your friend here." He may have not wanted to attack him, but if he talked crazy like how she talked, that's what I thought it was very, very important, because you got to go into the nuance of what was done there. If he had another, if it was just a white friend instead of the white female, and he said, "Man, that's some bullshit," it would have got aggressive. It would have just turned. That's what I'm saying. Like, the whole idea of that whole situation, even though he would have tried his best not to mistreat the white male, it may not go to an escalated situation where we got a, you know, a black male situation where he's getting killed, because of course we know that's normally what happened to us when we're in those kind of spots. Like, that, you're dead on arrival. And everybody, you know, you guys know me. Now, you know, if I said something that to an officer, what's going to happen to me? What would happen to me if I talk like that?
Body bag. Body bag.
Step
out
the car.
On the news, there was a male. I mean, just off my size alone, I'm dead. I'm dead.
Yep.
And you're in the place where no one's around.
There is no, and he could, and just based off my body type, automatically, he can sell that to any newspaper, any 2020, anybody that's doing investigating. Because of my size, I'm in my body, being in a black male's body, is automatically a so-called threat. No, not even without a gun. I thought he
thought he had a gun.
Big, No, just look how big he is. I mean, that gets back to what Dr. Weldon always says, the ability to annihilate and to cause that kind of uneasiness with them and who they're defending. Why would I go that hard on the person that we're going to be defending the most? That's the reason why I thought it was very, very important that Mr. Peel wanted to kind of isolate that scene and show you the white woman is control here.
But can you tie?
She controls the black male clearly, and she controls the white male race soldier that came to actually offer some kind of assistance. He's there to help. They didn't break no laws. Go ahead. What were you about to say?
I said, can you tie that into white female teachers in schools?
Ooh, I was going to get there, but I was going to go to Big Mama. When Big Mama was there, I was waiting on Big Mama because Big Mama is very important.
Because we really need to highlight and identify, because you're not going to get fed that information, but highlight and identify all the different roles that white women play.
Absolutely.
From the business community.
Absolutely.
The political community, the educational community, even something as simple as when they select, somehow they select white women to sit in jurors to convict black men. I'm not totally clear what the statistics are on that, but it just seems like it's a lot of white women as your equals somehow in these courtrooms, you know, giving you 30 years. Really for nothing. But anyway, I just think there's definitely different areas where we see how they've impacted all of us, really. I mean, most black males who are listening to this program probably had a white female teacher at some point, K-12.
All of us, I would imagine, do. I don't care what hood you're from. Most of the teachers are going to be young white women.
And not young white women from the projects.
Absolutely not.
From the trailer parks either.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, so the fix is in. The manipulation is in. The practicing of racism is in. All this acting like they don't understand what's going on. Well, anyway, let's push forward because it goes into all kinds of dynamics. So that right there being what it is, I think we understand that. We can move on. That's our code breaker's perspective when it comes down to that. T, did you have anything else you wanted to get to? Because I want to get to the house.
Move on to pulling up to the house.
There we go. We're pulling up to the house. So of course, as he's pulling up to the house, Chris is doing a quick take about who's working in the yard. Of course, he sees a big black male working in the yard. Gives him an actual smile. Doesn't look normal though. But he feels, I guess, some kind of comfort as seeing, and this is speaking to what Mr. Reed alluded to earlier, that, hey, there's some black folks, even though he's working in the yard, man, you know, he there's at least another black person around at least, so I'm not totally out here by myself. So maybe I'll share some thoughts with him, you know, when I can, you know, break free of all these white people and ask him what's really good with these white folks around here, you know?
And I'm going to say another thing about that scene you're talking about. To me, when I got to that scene, I think I realized at that point this movie is for white people and for their entertainment.
Well, that's always the case, I would imagine. I would say that's the case because what's better than to see you creating a system that has caused mass confusion? You have caused a group of people to basically work around you at all times, not to offend you at all times, even though they are the mistreated group. Like there should be constant confliction between the group that's oppressed and the group that's doing the oppressing. Like there should be constant conflict. There really shouldn't be this type of congruence. But the reason why there's this congruence, this type of socialization that's developed here, which is done through this movie, which shows the problem with racism and how people say, well, this is liberal racism. This is not liberal racism. This is just the fact that one group has been dominated and they've been forced to live with the actual group. And even when somebody is showing you whatever they want to call it, microaggressions, you just you just well that off because you know that it's not, you know, it's not actually.
But you know what though, it's in the school system. When you think about it, you have a school full of black kids. You never think about it. You have a school full of black children, I really never really thought about it. All the teachers are white women. The principal is a white male. What is going on that we think that like nothing in our minds think that something's not wrong with that picture? You know what I mean? Like just growing up, no one is really saying like this something is perverted about this. But anyway, go ahead. My bad.
So we get to the house, and of course he sees one of the actual groundskeepers that's a black male, and then he sees the actual I don't know if I want to call it a maid or the house worker that is a black female. Now, of course, he doesn't know to the extent that they've basically been hypnotized and they're really black people that have been basically put to a dormant state and that they're projecting whiteness through the white grandparents that's basically part of the Armitage family. Anyway, so Chris is meeting the parents for the first time, and I thought it was very, very interesting because I don't even know if, well, when he met, do you remember when he met the father at the door, that the father was kind of jumping around like he was in a basketball or a football game, like he was extra excited that he was there?
He was popping pills, man. You know, all white people are on drugs. You do know that, right? All of them take drugs.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But, I mean, it was like he was like, yeah, you know, and he was jumping up like he was about to, like, shoot some hoops or something. Like, it was weird because you're like, my man, you know, and all this. It was like, what? Like, what is this? You know, we hug around here and all this type of stuff. So I thought it was very, very interesting. And then, like, you know, how the mother – you know, she was just kind of like doing that examining. So this is where we get to who's really running the Armitage household. So of course, you know, they get into the house and, you know, they start to discuss and he's like, you know, what, you know, how long has this? Now everybody's playing a role. Now this is the thing about this movie. You know, if you watch this movie, you know that this is all an act, which should tell you something about how we don't understand or we don't know white people. Like, they can basically fool us at all times. We're like, oh, they were pretty nice. They were real, real nice to us, man. Hey, man, it was cool. Which means that, you know, we don't study whiteness enough. Now, we're around whiteness all the time, but we don't really just go into deep thought about why they're being so deceptive. Why they having these actually fake greetings where you can feel that there's something wrong. There's some uneasiness to it. You know, it's not genuine.
If you watch them long enough, and this goes for everybody who's listening, just spend some time, like you just said, listening and observing, and you truly will start to see how fake they really are. Just wait and watch, and it's going to come out, especially with the whole speaking introductions. I mean, especially in the business world, man, it's insane.
Oh, it's unbearable.
And in the educational institutions, it's insane, man.
It's unbearable. Well, first, you got to break through
the programming first, though, to get in that mind state where you can observe without bias, you know, objectively.
Yeah, if you're going in with the mindset to observe, it won't take long. That's what I've discovered. I've discovered that it's a thin veil, but we're so caught up in our own egos and caught up in being what we are and who we think we are that we don't take the, and I'm not saying we should, just generally speaking, but you know, we're bringing it to your attention now because you're listening. I'm paying more attention to it because I'm trying to create more clarity. It's honestly, it's kind of scary because, you know, you have some black folks like a Dr. Wells and this black woman, you know, at Howard University, you know, telling you all this crazy stuff. And then if you know, it's like, I'm not like, okay, she's not in my mind. I'm just sitting here and I'm going to start really paying attention. It's honestly, I won't even lie to you. For me, it's terrifying that these people can function this way, and that I have to be, you know, unfortunately, I have to deal with it. I have to interact with it. I have to live around it, knowing this information. Ignorance is bliss.
And if anybody want to question the authenticity of whether most teachers in America, and I would even say globally, that's in a so-called formal school setting, that's primary school or secondary school, which would be basically elementary, middle school, and high school.
Pushing democracy.
Yeah, that's teaching children in a classroom. It is overwhelmingly white women. It's not even. They have cornered the market on this. There is a website called the American Association of Colleges for Teacher mm-hmm. Education. Mm-hmm. You can look it up yourself. It has student diversity is up, but teachers are mostly white.
And counselors. The people who are committing your children to these other institutions, it's all connected. And then those are white women in those institutions that run those institutions that's, you know, reviewing your children to put them on drugs and stuff too. It's all some network, you know. And unfortunately, you have blacks in those networks who line right up with those people, which is very unfortunate. I have some interactions with a few people in education, and it's unfortunate to listen to what they say. I don't say anything. I just ask questions, and it's amazing that even you have blacks in those systems, unfortunately. That, of course, we all have to capitulate, you know, so we're in those situations and we tend to align, you know, we tend to buy in. You know, I know there's people on this call and just people that you might even know. We say a lot of things that align, unfortunately, aligns with whiteness. And a lot of it's due, unfortunately, to our ignorance.
Agreed. So moving on to Big Mama, I want to kind of discuss her because a lot of people don't really discuss the hypnotizing lady outside of her being in her little cup and what her role is in this whole deal as far as like...
You think she's Big Mama?
Yeah, she's Big Mama. That's the white woman's version. Yeah. That's the white woman's version of Big Mama. That's what it is. That's the deception.
What do you call them when they're like Asian, Eastern European... Or African,
I don't know.
Or Hispanic.
I would say the head matriarch. I'm just meaning as a head matriarch. You should look at her as Big Mama also. So even Asians, though, even
are they
though,
all Big Mamas?
You know, whatever the case, whoever's running the family, the woman that's running the family is Big Mama. That's all I'm saying for black people to listen to this program. Think of it like that. There's a different type of culture, but this is truly a matriarch. This is not a patriarch that you're looking at in this movie. It's clear that the males have basically given it up. He knows that he's not smarter than this woman. He's not more into the mental capacity than his woman or his daughter. He knows it. He's a neurosurgeon. He's clearly aware who's in charge.
He knows that
he can be hypnotized by his wife when he sleeps, and it can be real ugly for him. She can have him doing all kinds of things. He knows how dangerous she is. He knows it.
Do you think it's harder for black men or black boys to identify white women as being an apex predator versus a black female teenager or a black female adult?
How can you do that when she was so nice to you when she taught you in elementary school?
Yeah, my favorite teacher is a white woman, Miss Webb.
Think about it. She the one that you know used to sit with me and read and tutor with me and all this type of stuff.
I probably had what, 50, 60 teachers, 80 teachers. I remember one teacher, it's a white woman, math teacher. That's the only woman I remember. That's. But guess what? There was no. Well, let me see. Maybe I had a. I don't know if I had any. I don't think I had any black female teachers. Spanish, black male, all black females. Maybe one. one or two white males, and then a lot of foreigners when I got into the university. But you're right. I never thought about it actually, which is crazy. That's crazy, man. When I think about it, it's crazy.
Go ahead, T. Did you have an observation about?
You know, it's interesting you're talking about Big Mama, because one thing that I know we're coming up on break, but I know one thing that a lot of writers do is they will name their characters according to what their station is in the particular piece. So her name was Missy, and the name of Missy, it literally means bee. She is literally the queen bee of that particular hive. And for anyone that knows anything about bees, the nest is mostly, or the hive is mostly made up of females. They only have males, which are called drones, when they want to have offspring. So really it's the queen who's in charge. And so we'll go to break, but I do want to give out a couple of names and their meanings as well on the other side. So this is the Code Breakers. We'll see you back in a few.
Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
All right, this is the Code Breakers. We are here on the Black Talk Radio Network. You can find us on Black Talk Radio Network live from 9 to 11 on the first and third Tuesdays of the month. I think we was a little off, I think, this month. On our days, but you can definitely find us there. Definitely go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. Download our podcast. There's also other programs as well that you can listen to. Did you still want to keep going on your thought you was having?
Yeah, just a few more things. Thanks for that information, Paradox. The one thing that's significant about the name Missy, which means the. If you look at her husband, his name was Dean. And we know that the dean could be a monk or some sort of dignitary that is basically in charge of others or a group. You think of like the dean of a school. But it also means, it's someone who's in charge, essentially. So he is running the operation, so to speak, but he's not the basic brains behind it. And if you look at Chris, that comes from Christopher, which is another derivative of Christ. Christ was the sacrifice. Chris was the sacrifice. Rose, we know that pretty much is a flower. It's many times when one talks about flowers, what's the thing that comes to people's minds automatically going to be a rose, because that's pretty much the standard of beauty. The white woman has been created and propagandized and put forth as the standard of beauty in this society. Walter, who was Walter, I believe that was the grandfather who was in the black body. But Walter means ruler of the army. What army are we talking about? We're talking about the army of racism and white supremacy, because they passed the torch to their children. And then you look at Georgina, who was the grandmother in the black woman's body. It means farmer or tiller of the soil. So she was actually the original matriarch before she passed it on to Missy. She was there with the grandfather when they conceptualized this thing called the coagula. And so she was the one who prepared the soil, prepared the way, so to speak. So I'll leave it at that. Oh, but I did want to say, though, as far as Missy is concerned, if you ever, when they talk about Trump and his offspring, very rarely do they talk about his son, but they always talking about Ivanka. Ivanka this, Ivanka that.
Yeah, the sons are some buffoons. For that. They look like buffoons anyway. She's a hyena, for sure.
There you go.
Right on, right on. Thanks for sharing that information. And I guess we can kind of go into just discussing, basically, you know, from that particular point on, you know, Chris knows that there's actually something wrong here. That you know, as he goes along, he sees that, you know, the whole family dynamic, and plus the servants that are there in the house are acting very, very weird towards him. Let me just kind of like just go ahead and skip around because we're running short on time. What did you guys think about the interaction that he had with Georgina when, you know, he was basically speaking to her about, you know, the house and how, you know, how he feels when he's around white people, kind of seeing if he can get some kind of, you know, a little bit more information about, hey, am I in trouble here? Is there something going on? Like how his eyes was kind of like just wondering and kind of seeking a little bit of assistance here, and how we do as victims of racism, where we're in a situation where we're trying to get camaraderie with other victims, especially in a place where we feel the most vulnerable. And how we feel when we see that if there's a black person that we're talking to and they don't happen to agree or see it our way, how that kind of like just does a lot of damage and how it deflates you as far as like when you're in that situation at that time.
Yeah, to me, Walter and Georgina, the two so-called, you know, black servants, I guess you would call them, who are actually grandma and grandpa, white grandma and grandpa, they are actually reflections of so-called black people in everyday society. The thing that was so powerful about Georgina was that in a particular instance where she came in the room after Chris had, I think he had got off the phone, he was text messaging or something, and she startled him. And he you know, he pretty much was trying to kick game to her, like, you know, hey, you know, I didn't mean to snitch on you. And she's like, what do you mean? You mean tattletale? And then you can start to see the cracks in her persona, her facade, where she starts breaking through her programming to the point where, because you remember at the beginning where she was pouring the lemonade, Missy tapped her spoon on the edge of the cup, mm-hmm. and it changed her focal point. And so she actually was coming undone, and they told her to go lay down and get some rest. But anyway, you saw the crack in her facade, she started crying. You know, he said, I get nervous when I'm around a lot of white people. And she starts tearing up. But then the programming kicks back in, and she's like, no. You know, the Armitages are good to us. And so she's actually a reflection of what black people go through on a daily basis, which is living in a dual world. You're living in a world of blackness and a world of whiteness. So you have to, you're bilingual in the aspect of your personality. So you have two conflicting sides of yourself, both opposing each other. So you're trying to find a balance between the two.
So you mean our? You mean our? Are you saying that we have a white side to us?
Absolutely.
Because when I seen her struggling, I saw. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, no. Saying you have to have a so-called white side to yourself because you have to, in order to engage with the white society at large. We know that there are a lot of defensive mechanisms that kick in if you do certain things to make so-called white people uncomfortable. And it could be something as simple as changing your hair, which is something that it grows out of your scalp the way it does. Mm-hmm. You could grow a beard. You could do the smallest things that will automatically trigger defensive mechanisms in so-called white people.
I was saying, do you think that I'm going to say what you just said maybe in a different way. You tell me are we talking about the same thing. Is it a white woman that's trying to control the black woman inside her body? And that's what the struggle is.
Well, the override is the black woman. I guess if you want to get...
The black woman's trying to get through. And the white woman is blocking her communication.
The default is the black woman. That's the default. And so she defaulted to her standard self for a hot second there. But then she was brought back to the so-called white side. And so
you don't consider this film anti-black?
No, it's definitely. Well, I don't think that it was meant to be anti-black. I just think that us in the constant state of being black and not agreeing on a lot of ideas, it's going to be anti-black anyway. People are going to have a problem with, like I said, Daniel Kaluuya playing this character. They're going to have a problem with Jordan Peele being biracial. That's why I listed
that. I ain't talking about that. I don't think that's anti-black.
Okay, so
anti-black in a sense that this film was made to clown black people.
No, I don't. I think that it was done, and I'm thinking this is Jordan Peele. Like I said, he wanted to speak to the psychological effects of racism. You know, just basically what he was trying to reiterate is try to show the nuances. Like racism is not in your face anymore; it doesn't have to be overt.
So you don't think there's. I'm gonna use the word. I'm gonna insert the word possibility into my statement. So you don't think that it's a possibility that this film that he put together was designed to entertain whites and to be anti-black?
It's the viewer.
It's always
everybody that views this movie has a different point of view based off their experiences.
All right, let me ask it this way. Do you think that this guy Peele hates himself, hates being black, and he made this film to make clowns out of black people?
I don't think so.
I think it's a
commentary on a larger issue, personally. But the thing of it is, you can't just.
So you tell was he raised by white people? Was he raised by white people?
You can't just
raised by his white mother. Yes.
It doesn't matter who you raised by. But
so he came out of a white womb.
You can't come out with a movie that is full fledged.
See what you're doing.
Giving the truth.
You see what you're doing right there? Hey, Mr. Reed.
I think Mr. Reed want to jump in.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Reed.
Yeah, just how I can relate something real in my life to the film, I'm going to flip it and say, stay out. Here in the South, in a rural area where the population is probably, I'd say 80 to 85% white. And so we had these trailer parks below us, above us, where you have some white people who are just not doing as economically well as others might be doing. And coming up, telling my little brother, stay out. Stay out them trailer parks. Stay out because this, that, and the other can happen to you. And my brother accepting that lesson and stopped going up there and just hung out with the family. Now, my uncle, who has passed on, transitioned, he married a woman. She had two daughters. They were probably elementary school age at the time. And the oldest one, when she got up in middle school, want to go up to them trailer parks. And I remember hearing my uncle fuss at her, stay out them trailer parks. If I catch you going up there again, I'm going to whoop your behind. All right. So not long ago, maybe a year and a half ago, she continued to associate with certain, we'll just say certain types of people. She were told to stay out, you know, from these people. And she was at a motel with some people like that. And somebody shot and killed her. And her murder has yet to be solved. So that's my how I can personally relate. I don't think that he was being anti-black. Like, I think DC raised the point that he wrote this 8 years ago before he got married to. But I mean, I guess different people can take different things from the movie, but it could be a warning to stay out. But then that would kind of, you look at his real life, I could see where somebody might get confused. But yeah, I'm going to take stay out as the warning message from this movement, from this movie or film.
Thank you, Mr. Reed, for sharing those elocuted thoughts. Appreciate it.
Can you let, I think T, I wanted T to finish what he was saying, though. He was responding,
yeah, go,
I think.
Go ahead, T.
Well, no, the thing of it is that if you were going to put out a movie about the black psyche and how it functions within white society, you have to tell the story of, and the psychology, the ideology of racism and white supremacy. The people that control entertainment, one of the nine areas, or ten, they're not going to let you come up with a hardcore film on that level that he did, coming out hardcore telling it all straight. So he literally, I think he coded it, is what I think. He had to code it if he's going to put it out on the level that he did. So, I mean, obviously I don't know him personally, so, I mean, it's always a possibility that he
could. Well, I mean, okay, well then, let's go ahead and dig a little deeper. I know we got about 20 minutes or so, 15 minutes, but, so you two people are telling me right now that we vetted this person?
No. Absolutely.
The vetting process?
So that's we don't the so process. So
how does it function?
Look, what did Gus T. Renegade from the Cow? What did he was say about how do you determine, or is it Mr. Fuller? Which one was it? How do you determine who decides who's black and who's not black?
that's what I'm saying, alluding to what Scotty just shared to us, the viewer. And your experiences and your definition of what you feel blackness is. And that's why I say this is a forced classification that all of us has been thrown into. You're going to have a different reaction to them. You're not going to see it exactly like, you know, this person over here. You can go to the movie with someone that you know and that's in your family, and they're going to have a whole different point of view of what this movie means, what their angle is from the movie. See, like when I saw Georgina, and he was trying to share that information with her, I think that what ended up happening was it showed to me, out of all the people that was hypnotized, she was the one that was basically closer to being out of the sunken place. Like, she had to be basically hypnotized on a regular basis. And I think that has
strong
something
black
to do
woman.
That strong black woman, like sending out a shout out. I don't know if that's really what he was doing, but that's what I caught from it. Because everything, when it even came down to just pouring a drink, was difficult. Sitting, like she had to be still, like she had to constantly, the big mama, the matriarch of the family, she had to constantly hypnotize this woman. She had to suppress her at all times, which is what white women do on a regular basis. Like if you think about it, silencing black women. So what did we discuss a couple of months ago? Was it even a couple of months? Even a month ago about what happened here in D.C. with the Women's March, right? Where black women basically, and we talked about basically, and you brought this to my attention, Paradox, that white feminism can even be the Trojan horse.
Oh,
somebody
yeah.
that's coming in as a friend, but just infiltrating black spaces and figuring out how to disarm you at all cost. Where
black women,
where you're sharing a platform where these three women of color,
non-white women organized the whole march, but you still got white women being the loudest and the most pronounced voices and the most and the most and the most heard at these coverage programs.
So this is
what I mean by just suppressing and people being put in the sunken place. So I think of the sunken place as basically being in blackness.
To speak for the white feminists, I'm going to try to speak for them for about 2 seconds. You're
an apex predator. You don't know how I feel to be the apex predator. You don't know how I feel to be at the top of the food chain.
Well, you know, my DNA says a few different things about that. But anyway, I would try to harness a little bit of that. And I would just say that I think that they give great benefits. So black females, I know as a black male, I might not can do much for you. And I know that white women can probably give you great benefits, give you great access as they get more access to their husbands and their father's power. So, you know, I know it for us, it's we can have another program on this, but it's highly competitive in this environment. And so I know it's easy to align yourself and become allies to white females because they need you, ladies, as their base. I think they're going to exploit. They have been, not going to. Everything is historically based, obviously. So, I mean, they have been using black females as their base in my perspective, or historically speaking, I believe. And they will continue to. And they offer such great benefits. I want to just put that in there because I know that you can get some debate about, well, how can you tell us not to be together? We're all women, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So I do get their benefits. I do get what they offer. So I know that because of those things, it makes us all vulnerable. You know, we're vulnerable to white men because of what they offer to us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So no one's confused here. But be careful. Be careful. You know, and as you study history, you will understand that white women, they are not your friends or your business partners or your allies, for that matter. The black family, that's what we need to be promoting. But anyway, I just wanted to put that in there, man. Not to sidetrack you too much.
Are you good? Go ahead.
It's interesting how, speaking of the flash and how it altered the focal point, you know, he uses camera. You take a picture of the brother, for instance, as well as both the brothers, actually. I would alter their consciousness because he changed their focal point. I guess, you know, from a symbolic standpoint, I guess you consider it a flash of light, some type of conscious awakening that snapped them out of their programming. If you notice, they took the one brother, what was the brother's name that he met at the funeral for him, I guess is what you would call him.
Lakeith,
with the older white lady, yeah, Lakeith.
Lakeith Stanfield, Andre.
Stanfield.
We haven't even talked about the black friend yet as the voice of reason. But go ahead.
Yeah, the black friend is the Joker type archetype. But anyway, they took Andre once he broke programming. They took him into a room and she literally put him back under. It reminded me of like when you're on the plantation at work and you do something to upset white folks, and they take you aside and say, hey, look, man, you know, what's going on? You know, really like you, like what you're doing. You know, this is not necessary. You don't have to do this, you know. And you could be doing something as simple as standing up for yourself because someone is trying to ruin your reputation or mistreat you in some way. And so they'll pull you aside and get your buy-in. They'll basically put you back in the sunken place, and then you start to feel guilty. And you actually feel like you were wrong for something that you were not even responsible for. Mm. And so that was interesting to me. And then as far as the car that you talked about, DC, the white car, and he had a knight's helmet inside of the car. Mm-hmm. So he was like the knight in shining armor, like the white knight, but it was flipped, yes, almost like the Matrix, how in the Matrix they had
white
the Revolution. Where they had white suits on instead of black suits.
Yep.
But it kind of flipped that color dynamic. And then even when Paradox, he talked about vetting, how when he went to, he went to leave. He was getting away from the house. He was getting away from there. He broke free. He got in the car. He was leaving that place. But he hit Georgina. It reminded him of his mother. And he didn't want to leave her behind because he saw a black woman.
You know what? We should have just...
went back and got her. Put her in the car. And what did she do?
I didn't know that it was going to be... We have missed so many. We have missed so many parts to this movie, and hopefully the audience can bear with us. I think we have a caller on this unmuted 1184. If you want to share your thoughts, if you want to kind of chime in a little bit, we got like about 7 more minutes here. So if you want to share everybody. Your thoughts, greetings. What's going on? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, brother. I haven't even seen the movie, but just by listening to y'all describe different, scenes and stuff like that, it's almost like I've seen the movie because I can relate to the concepts that you're talking about. And when he was talking about, is the movie promoting that black people are. What did he say? He said, was this somebody promoting black people being clowned? I don't think the person that made the movie is trying to do damage necessarily. I think the concept of the movie is like stuff like this. Like, if you don't mix with them, or if you do mix with them, you still have the same result. The racism doesn't, like, when you hook up with them, the racism doesn't end. It just continues. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's kind of what the movie is about.
Wow, I hate that. I agree. I think that the forced classification of basically dealing with victims of racism, and like Paradox alluded earlier, the one drop rule is not one drop of whiteness and you're white. You know, whiteness has to be exclusive. So if whiteness is going to be exclusive, it has to be limited in number. You cannot have a large number of that being included and to keep the power intact. So you have to basically put rules and restrictions on it and be able to enforce it and make it law. So this group made a law, and they forced, Africans and natives alike to be put into the same category, regardless of your culture, your beginnings. But yeah, Go ahead, sir.
And also, I'd like to mention the concept of the female being like this person that tunes everybody up, so to speak. You know what I mean? White matriarch that you were talking about.
I call it that.
The brother was talking about earlier that, like, when you go to school, those are like the first people who kind of have such an impact on your self-image, your self-esteem, whole reward system they have when you on a test kind of that stuff, you know. Whole socialization, how school goes, and it tends to be a white female. And I was thinking also that that concept of beauty and that concept of whiteness being like good somehow is that's where it first happens at, basically. And school is where they first inculcate that shit. That's all I wanted to say.
It just think about the imprint that it leaves on black young little girls and black little boys alike that have to get through this and get through this type of social conditioning that happens, that where your whole idea of what's knowledgeable, what is good, what is so-called how to be, how to act, is seen through the gaze of a white woman. So anyway, we can go ahead and close up and give the final thoughts. So since I'm speaking, I'll go ahead and give mine. This is just my thoughts about the actual
movie. I do believe that the movie that Jordan Peele has put out there is a social commentary. I'm not going to say, well, no, this is how I feel about it. I feel like it's a masterpiece to me. I know that I have some of my brethren on the line that vehemently disagree with me, but this is the reason why I feel like this is something that needs to be studied, even when we're gone and off the planet. I think that we're reaching a time period where the psychological damage of slavery and the physical violence that happened after that brutal system has basically created a socialization paradigm where racism reigns supreme. And the white woman is the most dangerous of them all. And this kind of bears that out. Like, this movie is so realistic. It's not even funny. I know some people believe it is not realistic, but I believe it's incredibly realistic because of how people try to fit into white people's spaces. You're thinking that you're safe because you're around so-called good white folk. But there isn't no such thing because the system doesn't allow it. For people to be allowed in these particular spaces, they have to practice racism. They have to practice whiteness. I mean, there are so many things that we miss from basically how to kill deer and all this and all other things that the relationship between the husband, the older parents and things of that nature. But we didn't even get to the brother also. So maybe we'll discuss this on another one of our programs. But I just wanted to kind of get our little point of view out there and get our ideas out about the movie Get Out. So those are my final thoughts on it. Stay woke, everybody. T, did you have any final thoughts you wanted to kind of share before we get up out of here?
Yeah, just quickly, whether you believe art imitates life or life imitates art, just looking at Chris as a character, I hate to give advice, but my view is try not to live your life and viewing the system through a lens, which is what he did. And he was very innocent, almost childlike to a degree, very naive and very non-observant outside of using his camera as a way to view things. So we had to kind of step back and look at things from a realistic perspective. As Paradox alluded to, studying racism, white supremacy, I think that's key, getting a better understanding of the psychology and how it works. That I think is paramount before anything else takes place in terms of groundwork to build any type of structure.
Yeah, I just want to say just shout out to my grandfather. I hope that he stays well. Also want to say from a Dr. Welsing's perspective, love yourself, you know, black love, hug yourself. Love being black. A lot of things that she say, people need to go and really listen to a lot of things that she say when it just comes to trying to heal oneself, being able to accept what you are. You know, growing up and being in this environment, a lot of families, unfortunately, because it's not enforced, tend to ignore that we need to recognize that we are black and that we need to love black. And I think that will help help a lot of us get a better understanding and pay a little bit more attention to who we are and what we are and how we respond to this environment. Well, this is the Code Breakers. I'm Paradox.
I'm D.
And T.
Until next time, peace. Stay woke.